if everyone is ready. So it's very interesting. So there is a story that long ago, Drinfeld, being asked how many people should be present in the room for him to give a talk. And he said, like, empty. The room can be empty. At the time, it was considered as a joke because the virtual room was not invented. Yeah, but now I'm basically speaking with zero actual number of people in the room. So, but anyway, may I start? So that's, so this is a title. And the aim of my talk is to give kind of an overview of some parts of very large joint project with Maxim Kontsevich called Holomorphic Floer Theory. It has many ramifications, and today I will overview some of them. So this is my plan. There are many more slides than I will be able to show during the, say, 1 hour or 1 hour plus talk. So if I will have to stop somewhere in the middle, I will be happy to mail slides to whoever wants them. So essentially, the talk will consist of kind of three parts. One is the introduction, as it has to be. The second part is some abstract story about Riemann-Hilbert correspondence, pretty abstract, so you can skip it. And the last part is examples, probably the longest. So, but in order for people to remember at least something, I will start with two slides, which are related to holomorphic Floer theory. This is the first one. And deformation quantization. This is the first one, this is the second one. They look similar. And basically what is on this slide, it's a spectral curve L, and X is also a curve. So kind of all main ingredients are present. There are two holomorphic Lagrangian submanifolds in the Katangian bundle, which is a complex symplectic surface. And this is basically what, in general, holomorphic Floer theory is dealing with. From this picture, you can derive the Riemann-Hilbert correspondence, say, for bundles with connections, or more generally, for the modules on the curve. The second one, it's related to the theory of DQ modules, or Q difference equations, and now instead of Katangian bundle to the curve, we have C star square, product of the base, C star cross star. And again, we have a spectral curve, which is L, this green L. And we have the analog of the Katangian fibers, which are this red foliation by the vertical C star. And below this picture, we see basically the general philosophy of how to connect this geometry, which is certainly part of the Floer theory, with D modules. You simply consider the Foucault category of the ambient, in this case, surface. Consider it as a C infinity manifold, which is four dimensional for these two slides. And you consider Holmes in the Foucault category from your Lagrangian L endowed with a trivial local system. And the variable vertical fiber Lx endowed with some, again, variable local system, which can be non-trivial in the case of C star. So for those who like C star action, you see that in both stories, in this one and in this one, we have a C star action, and we have a sort of a holomorphic Lagrangian skeleton, which is a base of this vibration. And also the whole thing consists of points which are attracted to this Lagrangian skeleton when the parameter T on C star goes to zero. So this is, in two words, the geometry which relates two subjects, Floer theory, holomorphic Floer theory, this is important, and deformation quantization, at least in special cases. And now I go to the introduction, which sort of, since I expect that some physicists would listen, so I start with some names which are familiar to physicists, like Kapustin, Witten, and Gukov. And basically, it's all about the subject of brain quantization. So the boundary conditions for in the A model can be isotropic. It's an old idea. So in particular, there is this, there can be canonical coisotropic A brain, BCC, which wrap the whole symplectic manifold. So these coisotropic brains, they cannot exist on general symplectic manifolds, but they can exist for holomorphic symplectic ones like hyperkeller. And so the challenge was for mathematicians to give a meaning of these coisotropic brains within the framework of Floer theory. And it's still not done, and probably it's a wrong idea in general. But it can be done within the framework of holomorphic Floer theory. In particular, this mysterious canonical coisotropic brain can be understood by means of algebraic geometry. It was done essentially mathematically in the paper of Kansevich of 2000. On deformation quantization of algebraic varieties. So the setup for that Kansevich paper was to consider, say, affine Poisson, in particular symplectic algebraic variety, and find a good compactification, so it becomes compact. And then use his early work on deformation quantization in C infinity setting and quantize the algebra of functions on this Poisson manifold considered as a filtered algebra. So the point is that if we choose a compactification, then we can filter it by the order of pole, and such a filtration is important if you want to define, for example, a category of holonomic modules for the quantized algebra. So later we will modify this idea and you'll see how it will work. All right. Now, this is a sort of a short reminder of how physicists understand this brain quantization. They have the coisotropic brain, and endomorphism of this object is an algebra. And by general categorical reasons, if you have the whole category, which includes coisotropic brains, then you have a vector space from BCC to some other boundary condition associated maybe with other holomorphic Lagrangian submanifold or even subvariety. And so this VL is a module over AM. Now, you can, of course, replace the cotangent bundle by something more general, like affine symplectic variety. So then the corresponding algebra should be a deformation quantization of the algebra of regular functions on M. Or you can shiftify if M is not necessarily affine. So then to any complex Lagrangian L in M, one should be able to assign a module of finite type over the quantization of this algebra. So this is how mathematicians can think about brain description, kind of mathematically about this brain quantization, which of course was known in mathematics long before Kapustin, Witten, and Gukov. All right. So this is a conclusion So in the language of physics, we should have a functor from boundary conditions associated with complex Lagrangians to something which should be called holonomic module over the endomorphisms of the canonical coisotropic brain. Now, mathematically, we start with a holomorphic symplectic manifold, not necessarily compact. It can be algebraic and it is useful. We can convert it, if we are symplectic topologists, we can convert it into C-infinity symplectic manifold by taking the real part of the holomorphic form, and the remaining imaginary part should be treated as a B-field. Then the conjectural Riemann-Hilbert correspondence, it's still stated a bit informally, but a bit more rigorously from mathematics perspective, is that in the derived sense, the category of holonomic modules of the quantized sheaf of regular functions, this is a notation for this quantized sheaf of regular functions, is equivalent to the Foucault category associated with this symplectic form and this B field. So terminology which I will be using is that the Derham site, which corresponds to this D module, or better to say DQ module, deformation quantization module, it's a Derham site of the Riemann-Hilbert correspondence, and topological site, which is a Foucault category, it's a Betti site. All right, now comes the difficult part. So there will be next 7 slides in which I will make this conjecture much more precise, but also much more abstract. So you can kind of relax and skip them. So then I will return to examples. But for those who likes categories, maybe it will be appealing. So the motivation for what will go on. So both the Foucault category and the deformation quantization, they depend on the homology class of the symplectic form, whatever it is. So, and the conjecture is that they depend analytically. And the same is true, for example, for B field. So if you look for the definitions of both, then kind of deformation quantization gives you the category which is linear over formal power series in the deformation parameter, and the Foucault category is linear over the Novikov field. All right. So the expectation is that under some conditions, all the series which appear in the story, they converge. And both the Betti and the Derham sites of the Riemann-Hilbert correspondence are global sections of some analytic shifts of A infinity categories over an analytic two-step. All right, so there is some background noise. I don't know how it comes, but I certainly hear it, and it's disturbing.
I found the Allah. Please mute your mic.
Yeah, it will be helpful. All right, so anyway, I start with the Foucault, with the Betti side, which actually it's C infinity. We don't have to work with holomorphic symplectic manifolds. What are the data for the Foucault category? So it's a smooth symplectic, say, connected manifold, an almost complex structure compatible with a symplectic form. Also, the trivialization of the tensor square of the canonical bundle associated with this almost complex structure. Also, one need to fix the open covering and the Cech cycle, which represent the B field. So again, and these slides, which kind of will, I will talk about some analytic two stacks. I cannot give all the details. Basically, every slide is a separate large story. So you kind of just either accept it or skip it. So the thing is that with this data, one can associate an analytic two stack. And basically the idea is a general idea, which will be also applied to the DRAM side of the story, is that you look for a differential graded Lie algebra of symmetries of this data. And it concentrates in degree bigger than minus one. In fact, it is concentrated in degrees minus one, zero, and one. And so one can construct by standard methods of deformation theory the so-called Deligne two-groupoid, for which, for example, the main thing it's a solution to the Maurer-Cartan equations associated with this differential graded Lie algebra. And so minus one part of the differential graded Lie algebra, it provides equivalences between solutions. So it can be done for in C infinity stuff. We do not need the holomorphic structure. So then we have something, some analytic two-stack. And this is not the whole story. And this is an interesting part, which I would like to kind of to concentrate on a little bit. So there is this substack in this abstract stack of all possible deformations of the Foucault category. This two substack, I denoted by x smaller than one, and it deals something with Gromov-Witten theory. You cannot just invent it out of your head. So, and the conjecture, basically, the conjecture is that there is an analytic sheaf of triangulated A infinity categories over this smaller stack. And global sections of this sheaf is a sort of a universal Foucault category. Now, this substack, it is defined in terms of the function on the bigger stack. This function satisfies certain homogeneity property, and it is continuous with respect to the second homology class of the symplectic manifold. Now, morally, this function can be defined in the following way. You look for the number of rational Gromov-Witten invariants, such, and you look for those of them which has a symplectic area smaller than fixed constant. So then this number has an exponential bound which depends on some parameter rho. And so this substack is defined by the condition that this rho is smaller than one. Now the sheaf of categories which I mentioned above, it is enriched over the category of perfect complexes of this analytic two substack. Now, this interesting function rho, it of course deserves a separate study and people try to understand it. It is expected that for hyperkeller manifolds and abelian varieties, it is equal to zero. So then for most of my examples, probably it's just zero. But for example, for the quintic, three-dimensional quintic, it's non-trivial. And in general, again, it's sort of a speculation. It should be given by the logarithm of the minimal radius of convergence of the periods of the mirror dual Calabi-Yau manifold. So in any case, we have the stack X and we have its substack X smaller than one. It's still too abstract, but the thing is that my two stack admits much simpler, submits some nice cover by tube domains. These tube domains are the product of some domains in the second cohomology of the symplectic manifold, some, and some torus. So they are indeed tube domains in mathematical sense. So, and so they are given by the symplectic form and the B field. So basically, this abstract two stack of deformations is covered by some very simple things which depend on this class of the symplectic form and class of the B field. So then these much simpler substacks U, they of course has substacks U smaller than one, defined in the similar way using the function rho. And so having this universal sheaf of Fukuya categories, we can pull them back to these simpler analytic two stacks. And now it becomes, after these pullbacks, it becomes obvious that the sheaf is enriched over perfect complexes, because this is true for any element of this cover. And so one can use this formalism in order to axiomatize the analytic dependence on the symplectic form. Now, if you want to go to the conventional Novikov rings, which are very much familiar for people working with Fukuya categories, one should consider the analytic path in the two stack and consider just a formal expansion along this analytic path. All right. Now, in order to define the substack, in order to define, to compare later with the category of holonomic modules, we need to add to conventional story of Fukuya categories singular Lagrangian subvarieties. This is a completely separate story and it deserves a separate lecture. The only thing which I can say here that it can be done, and it's done, it's a section in our paper with Maxim. We call it formalism of five equations. I'm not going to explain it, I just illustrate it in the next slide. So this is a picture. So the whole formalism, it uses a conventional Fleur theory and mixture with a symplectic field theory of Eliasberg, Giventhal, and Hofer. And so, and also some language of geometric language of A infinity categories, which we invented like 15 years ago, but which is not of kind of which people do not use. But nevertheless, it allows this formalism of five equations, allows a to add singular Lagrangians to the Fleur theory with very mild condition on singularity, like Whitney stratified. And this is it. So anyway, so in this way, we get some analytic two stack and sheaf of triangulated A infinity categories. This is my Betti side. On the Durham side, we have a similar story. We have a holomorphic symplectic manifold. And looking at the deformation theory of this, for example, if M is compact algebraic, we can look for the deformation theory of perfect complexes on M. And so we can construct the analytic two stack again in this Deligne style, looking at the differential graded Lie algebra parametrizing quantizations. Now, this analytic two stack can be mapped to this two stack U smaller than one, which appeared, which is related to tube domains, which I mentioned on the previous slide. Now, we can define, and again, it's a separate story, how working with a category of all possible finite type modules over deformed algebra on M, how to define the subcategory of holonomic modules. It's easy to do when you work with formal parameters, but it's not that easy if you want that things are analytic. But nevertheless, it's possible to do that. And so in the end, we have an analytic sheaf of A infinity category of holonomic objects over this two stack. And so we can pull it back here. And when we pull it back to the analytic two stack associated with the tube domain, we can compare it with the previous slide where we discussed the universal sheaf of Foucault categories. So the universal Riemann-Hilbert correspondence claims an equivalence of the global section categories for these sheaves. This is what Riemann-Hilbert correspondence, what is it if you start to think a little bit deeper about it. All right, this is the end of the abstract part. And now I will be much, much more concrete. So,
can I ask a question?
Yes.
I'm just wondering on the Durand side, why should we be working with A infinity categories? Why do you expect them to be A infinity categories naively?
Well, because the thing is, well, first of all, the Riemann-Hilbert correspondent, the conventional one, it holds only in the derived set. One thing. Second thing is that the deformation theory, which I am talking here, it's a deformation theory of categories. It's a deformation theory of the categories of certain perfect complexes, not just of algebras. Sometimes you can kind of downgrade it to deformations of algebra. This is what Maxim explained in 2000 in his paper. But in general, everything exists only in the derived sense. And that's if you ask why A infinity, because A infinity, it's a main object. Everything is A infinity from the very beginning. For me, there are no other cases. There are no DG categories. There are just A infinity. Whatever this A infinity just by construction. So I consider deformation, for example, my category of perfect complexes as an A infinity category enriched over perfect complexes on this analytic two step. So then basically A infinity is from the kind of it's implemented from the very beginning. Different question if you want to kind of to approach it in the conventional way, how to see the same infinity structure, but it's a different. All right, so anyway, until the end of my talk, I will concentrate on the Riemann-Hilbert correspondence in the dimension one, which means that my M will be a complex surface. So, and there will be basically three types, three different colors. So for differential equations or for D modules, my surface, symplectic surface, is a cotangent bundle, like on the very first slide in my talk, with standard symplectic structure. I call this rational case for the reason which will be clear soon. For Q difference equations, it's C star square with a standard symplectic form. It's my second slide, and I call this trigonometric case. And also the elliptic case, the geometry is a product of the elliptic curve with a C star, with a natural holomorphic symplectic form. And this is elliptic case. So in all three cases, the Riemann-Hilbert correspondence, which I formulate in sort of in down-to-earth terms, no sheaves, or no two stacks, it will be just equivalence of categories. And as a slogan, it's the Ram side is equal to the Betti side, but both sides will depend on the partial compactification. All these symplectic surfaces, they are non-compact, and this partial compactification is essential for everything. So we call this partial compactification a log extension of M. And it can be, definition can be done in any dimension. So if you have a Poisson variety obtained, say, from a full Poisson compactification, say, of a holomorphic symplectic manifold, say, by normal crossing divisors, then we can keep from this full compactification only those divisors, or rather open part of those, where the symplectic form has a pole of order one. So that's explained the term log. They are log with respect to the symplectic form. Or equivalently, the Poisson structure.
What is the definition of having a pole for order one?
Of pole of order one, which means that it's okay. So this is an illustration. It is a factor. If your divisor is given by the collection of equations, say one divisor xi equal to zero, then it's a product of dxi over xi with something regular. Or equivalently, you can speak in terms of a Poisson structure, then it has just zero order one, exactly with the same convention. All right, so now there are generalizations of this notion, which I don't want to discuss, but yes, it does exist and it's written in our file. It's a notion of symplectic variety with corners and the corresponding abstract notion, which is relevant, it's Calabi-Yau category with corners, which is a generalization of the notion of Calabi-Yau category with a boundary, which has been considered by several people. But for a complex dimension too, we don't need these corners, so Calabi-Yau category with boundary is okay. All right, now, what are the answers for this partial compactification, which is non-unique? M log is non-unique. Okay, I start with a trigonometric case because it's easier to say what it is. So it's C star square. We can take any compact toric surface and we should remove intersections of toric divisors. So then what is left, except of C star square, it's a union of copies of C star. And this probably, it explains why I call it trigonometric. Now, the geometry, this geometry is related to the Riemann-Hilbert correspondence for Q difference equations, which I will discuss later. So Q is a fixed quantization parameter, like exponent of the Planck constant. In the elliptic case, compactification is natural. M was a product of the elliptic curve with C star, and so we compactify C star to CP1. So we have two log divisors, each is a copy of the elliptic curve. So this geometry is related to the Riemann-Hilbert correspondence for elliptic difference equations. So it's an elliptic analog of this. We have a fixed element in the elliptic curve, a shift, and this is all right. Here the remark is that there is another version of the elliptic case, which I'm not going to consider. For that symplectic surface is CP2 minus smooth cubic, and the symplectic form is the one which has a pole of order one on this divisor. So a quantization of this gives Sklenin algebra instead of holonomic modules over Sklenin algebra instead of elliptic difference equation. Now, the longest story is the case A, which is related to the conventional Riemann-Hilbert correspondence of holonomic d-modules on the curve. For example, bundles with possibly irregular connections. So I think I gave a talk on that stuff here at perimeter, but let me at least briefly recall you, because it's a mixture of the classical, it's all known before, but you will see kind of a very convenient reformulation of the Deligne-Malgrange Riemann-Hilbert correspondence in terms of Foucault categories. Okay, so here we have a start with a complex projective curve with finitely many marked points. To every marked point, we associate, let's say, a Puiseux polynomial, so this can be rational, in negative powers with respect to the local parameter. Of course, it can be set coordinate in a coordinate free way. All right, also each polynomial can appear several times, so there is a multiplicity. So we call this data a singular term. The claim is that if we fix this singular behavior at given points, for example, for meromorphic connections, then we can construct the certain partial compactification of the Katangian bundle, this log extension. And this log extension depends on the choice of this singular term. This is how it's done in words, but let me maybe go to the next slide and explain in picture. So this is my curve. This is, for example, a singular point where we have some fixed singular behavior. And x infinity is another copy of x at infinity. So it's fiber-wise compactification of the Katangian bundle. So at each of these singular points, we start to make blow-ups. Well, in general, it's an inductive system. There are infinitely many of them. But in the end, we keep only those on which the pullback of the symplectic form has a pole of order one. This is what explained in words here. And the thing is that there is a bijection between these log divisors and singular terms. So we can keep log divisors, finitely many of them, such that there are as many of them as singular terms at this point. So then we somehow replace algebra by geometry. So then what we have on the Durham side? We have this finite set collection of singular terms. Then we have a category. We can work even in the abelian setting, not necessarily derived. We have a category of holonomic demodules with prescribed singular terms at given point. For example, the category of connections, it's a subcategory. All right, so it's important I fix a singular behavior. This is a Durham side. And the Riemann-Hilbert correspondence, it's Delinian-Malgrange, beginning of 80s. Now I will connect that answer to the Foucault story, which is the Betti side. So the Betti side, for me, M is a Katangian bundle to my curve, which is a complex surface of four-dimensional symplectic manifold. But I also have a partial compactification. And I use this partial compactification in order to allow some non-compact holomorphic manifolds, in fact, varieties, they can be singular. And I describe them in the following way. I consider such Lagrangian submanifolds that their closure in the M log is compact, which means, for example, if L can be like spectral curve, it can be complex. It's a complex curve. So I require that it intersect only log divisors in finitely many points. And if, since L does not have to be a curve, it can be C infinity, like two-dimensional Lagrangian, I require that near intersection point with the log divisor, it looks as a cylinder, as a C star. Of course, it's automatic when it's a curve. Now, again, symplectic form is a real part of the holomorphic one, B field is this one. So then I can define, technically it's called partially wrapped Foucault category. And A infinity structure, if I allow singular Lagrangian, it comes from our formalism of five equations. So it does exist. But for a moment, you may assume that L are just smooth Lagrangian, then it's part of the conventional story. Now, this category admits a description in terms of constructible sheaves, and this is why we can compare it with Deligne-Malgrange. This is a description. So basically, let me see whether I have, yeah. Let's better look at the picture. So these are my singular points, and each singular term is used in order to construct a small real analytic curve about the singularity. Here is a description of this curve. It's a map of the standard circle, and this is the map. It depends on the real part of my negative Puiseux polynomial. So then I have a bunch of real analytic curves. Then I can consider the conormal bundles. And since everything is co-oriented, I can take just the positive part, these half cylinders. So these are my Lagrangians. So if you'd like, they are A-brains. So then the Foucault category in question is generated by the zero section with some small disks about singularities removed, if we would like to talk about connections, and the unions of these positive conormals. And again, the standard Fleur theory, or our formalism of five equations, it gives an A-infinity structure on this category. So in terms of constructible sheaves, I consider just constructible sheaves on my curve with a singular support, which belongs to the to this Lagrangian, which belongs to the union of the zero section and this conormals. So then either of these two descriptions gives the answer for the Foucault category, for this f of m. Well, like if you want proofs, you can derive them by comparing with the work of Nadler, Schende, Treumann, and Zaslow several years ago. But then the Riemann-Hilbert correspondence is a statement that the Derham side, which are, say, for example, meromorphic bundles with connections with prescribed singularities at given points, it's equivalent to the Foucault category. All right, so this is a Riemann-Hilbert restatement of the Riemann-Hilbert correspondence in the irregular case in our terms. Next stop is the trigonometric case. Now, instead of differential operators and d-modules, we consider quantum torus. And of course, it's a deformation quantization of this affine symplectic manifold. It's possible to define the category of holonomic modules. If you want to work with formal series, it's defined in a trivial way. You just consider Lagrangian supports mod H. But this is not very interesting if you'd like, for example, to put later Q equal root of unity, but there is a formalism using Bernstein type filtration on the modules over this algebra. And so this holonomicity can be defined intrinsically. There is a local classification of holonomic modules over the quantum torus. This is essential. I skip this part on the d-module side, but this is these singular terms, C alpha, yeah, they appear because there is a local classification of, say, irregular connections on the formal disk. This is called HLT theorem, Fukuhara level Turitian. There is an analog of that story for Q difference equations due to Ramis, Saloy, and Zhang. It's like about 10 years old story. All right, so then at least we can try to make something similar to what we saw in the story with D modules. Having a Q difference equation, the sheaf of solutions, it's of course a coherent sheaf on the elliptic curve because sort of elliptic functions, they play a role of constants. If we shift by Q, nothing gets changed. All right. Now, what we have, what categories appear in this story? It's very interesting. So on the Betti side, at first glance, we do not see a constructible shifts, not like perverse shifts like in the D module story. We have coherent shifts on the elliptic curve. Q is the same as in the Q difference equations, but each shift comes with two finite filtrations by coherent subshifts, which labeled by numbers like real or often, more often even rational, and maybe some infinity for torsion shifts, with successive quotients which are semi-stable, but with strictly increasing slopes. Kind of inequalities are opposite to what one would have for harder Narasimhan filtration. So then we call such filtration anti-harder Narasimhan. So then basically we are talking about coherent shifts on the elliptic curves endowed with two anti-harder Narasimhan filtrations. And so then the theorem is that we can formulate it even in the abelian setting. The abelian category of holonomic modules of the quantum torus is equivalent to the abelian category. It's not obvious, but it is true. Abelian category of coherent shifts on the elliptic curves, which are endowed with two anti-harder Narasimhan filtrations labeled by rationals and infinity. So these two anti-harder Narasimhan filtrations, they are interesting by itself. They are analogs of the Stokes data at zero at and infinity. So now our curve is C star. We cannot do it for an arbitrary curve, it's just C star. And so we have two special points, zero and infinity. So let me skip this kind of a pedantic description of these filtrations. And let me again go to the picture. So, which are familiar for people who know what is a Lagrangian skeleton and the Fourier theory. So these four rays, rational rays, they are slopes of the successive quotients. And F1, F2, F3, and then F4, they are semi-stable quotients with increasing slopes. So then my object can be depicted in this way. And if you look at these four rays are straight rays, and they should be thought of as singular Lagrangians on the plane R2. This is not just kind of a coincidence. This is essential for higher dimensional generalization. So this combinatorial picture, at least partially combinatorial, some singular Lagrangians endowed with objects of my category. So they parameterize, they give the answer. So now for higher dimensions, instead of rational rays, we should consider rational Lagrangian fans of cones, which are again singular Lagrangians in R2n. This is one remark. The second remark is an alternative answer, which is very much similar to what we saw in the case of D-modules. Suppose we fix the collection of rational arrays, which are slopes of anti-Harder Narasimhan filtrations, and which are analogs of these singular terms in the case of QD modules. Each rational array defined via the closed geodesic on the two-dimensional torus, T square. T square sits in C star square, but it's not Lagrangian, it's totally real. Nevertheless, I can play the same game. I can consider the positive of conormals to these finitely many closed geodesics. And I can consider, for example, constructible sheaves with singular supports on the zero section and the union of these positive conormals. But I should somehow take care about the fact that T2 is not Lagrangian. It's different from the case of D-modules, where the zero section, my curve was a Lagrangian in the Katangian bundle. Here, T square is not Lagrangian, C star square. And I impose a monodromy condition that if I restrict to the zero section, to my torus, then the monodromy is given in terms of the symplectic area. In fact, I should take the integral over the torus of this expression. So then this answer, I get some category of constructible sheaves with prescribed singular support. And this category is equivalent to the Foucault category. All right, I still have some time. Oh yeah, I still have about 10 minutes to discuss the elliptic case, which I don't remember whether I discussed it here in the last year. It's very interesting because it gives several hints on generalizations of both Derham and Betti sides, and also it connects the whole story to the in a sort of in a natural way to three periodic monopoles. All right, now in the elliptic case, on the Derham side, we should have elliptic difference equations. And this is how we, possibly with singularities, and this is how it can be described in a little bit more formal way. So we have two collection of marked points on the fixed elliptic curves, poles and zeros. And we have a shift by the fixed element. So then holonomic elliptic module is given by the holomorphic vector bundle together with the holomorphic isomorphism. It's a very natural definition. So elliptic difference equations and some of versions of the Riemann-Hilbert correspondence, they are not totally new. There is a big, like about 200 or even more than 200 pages, a paper by Eric Ryans in the archive. And I'm going to explain this Riemann-Hilbert correspondence, but I will kind of add more structures to the story, which I could do in the case of rational and trigonometric, but in order to save time, I didn't do that. And this new structure is a parabolic structure. On the Derham side, it's kind of not very difficult to work out. On the Betti side, which means the Foucault category, it's new. Just as sort of remark, using these parabolic structures, we developed the version of non-abelian Hodge theory of Simpson in dimension one, which means for trigonometric and elliptic cases, which I think it wasn't known before. So these parabolic structures are useful. That's what I would like to say. Now, here is the geometry. And this is the geometry for people familiar with periodic monopoles, not necessarily three periodic, although I will talk about three periodic monopoles, but this is a geometry of monopoles, but for the group GLN, for UN only. So that's a geometry of three-dimensional manifold endowed with an affine structure. In this case, in our case, in the elliptic case, I require that it's isomorphic to the standard torus. Now, I fix also finitely many points, sort of a singularities of my monopole, if you'd like. Let's choose an orientation on three-dimensional manifold, which gives me a splitting of these points into positive and negative parts. And the important structure is a one-dimensional foliation with a transversal complex structure, which allows us to convert, to move from three dimensions to two dimensions. It's a very much well-known geometry, I think, for all who hear me now. And let's assume that this foliation is locally constant in the affine coordinates. All right. So now this data can be described in terms of rank 2 subbundle in the complexified tangent bundle, or equivalently closed C-valued locally constant forms on my three-dimensional manifolds, which I define up to a non-zero complex complex factor. All right. Let me see whether I need this. Okay, this is just a slide which explains that this data, which I described on the previous slide, they are naturally parameterized by CP2 minus RP2. This should be thought of as a space of classical parameters for the future quantum story. There is a similar thing for trigonometric case, but in the elliptic case, it's CP2 minus RP2. You can do this, for example, using this last description in terms of complex valued one form. Now, with this data, so sort of quantization, it's a certain abelian category, which depends on my three-dimensional manifold foliation and the splitting of this finite set of singularities into the union of positive and negative, which, of course, when we go to the transversal complex curve with respect to this foliation, it will amount to singularities and poles on the transversal elliptic curve. So these objects of this abelian category, they are C-infinity complex vector bundles on the complement to the set of singularities, with a connection along the foliation, which is transversally holomorphic. So, and equivalently, it's C-linear. This is explanation of this data above. All right. There are also some additional data. If you want to convert entirely this data into holomorphic one, we need some decorations at these points and some additional semi-stability conditions, which I do not have time to explain now. But in the end of the day, the category which we get is the category of three periodic monopoles on R3 with prescribed set of singularities, like Dirac singularities, at the given points. So again, this is known for many years. In, for example.
Sorry, I'm confused. Is this an additive category?
Yes, I consider only GLN, no general group.
This is periodic monopoles for all GLNs at once.
Yes, correct. This is true. Yeah. Now, all right, this is what I said before, that I can convert using the transversal complex structure this category into the category of holonomic elliptic modules. I think it's essentially is contained in Charbonneau and Hurtubise. But the interesting part is that the moduli stack of these categories, it expected to be isomorphic to the classical moduli space, modulo the action of SL3Z. And this is not obvious. For this, you should look for the non-commutative Hodge structure on this category A. Now, let me make since, let me see, do I have any time? I don't have, but let me just briefly kind of borrow 5 minutes to explain the Foucault part because it's interesting by itself. Okay, so this is elliptic curve product with C star, but also I remember this partial compactification. So I have two compactifying divisors, each is elliptic curve. And also I have marked points on each of the two divisors. All right, so then we can define the corresponding partially wrapped Foucault category. All right, so the requirement is that if I have a Lagrangian manifold in this product of the elliptic curve with C star, then it can hit the compactifying divisors only at the given points. But the monodromies, so I introduce a parabolic structure. I fix numbers theta ij plus minus, one for each of these two divisors at infinity and zero. And I require that monodromies of the local systems, which sit on my object of the Foucault category on these Lagrangians, they are prescribed. So this is a parabolic Foucault category. And so then the conjecture is that now in the A infinity or in the derived A infinity sense, this Foucault category is equivalent to the category of three periodic monopoles with prescribed conditions at the singularities, which I didn't have time to explain. Now, the choice of the foliation, it depends on the data. So things match to each other. And this quantum answer for the moduli space, it's kind of easy to read when you look at the Foucault side of the story. All right, this is the last slide.
Could I ask a question about the previous? Yeah. I'm wondering if the compactification of the Lagrangians, are they smooth in this case?
So that's a good point. Near the intersection with the divisors at infinity, in all cases, my Lagrangians are smooth and they look as cylinders. Now, but inside, they can be singular. Inside, they can be singular. And this is—
Where can they be singular?
In this case, in kind of a far from compactifying divisors. Like you have a symplectic manifold, elliptic curve in this case, product with C star, and somewhere in the middle between these two divisors, which sit at infinity, you can have some singular part of your Lagrangian. It does not affect the parabolic structure. Just two things, higher dimensional story, which again, it's n-dimensional Calabi-Yau categories with corners. If, for example, you want to work with holonomic DQ modules, generalizing what I have said, you should look at the compactifying log divisors. Each of them is foliated. It's a Poisson sub-variety, say, in the algebraic case. Each is foliated by its own complex symplectic leaves. So then the requirement is that non-compact Lagrangians, which I allow, they should not only intersect these log divisors at infinity, but the intersection should be the union of finitely many Lagrangians in finitely many symplectic leaves. So it's a separate story, which requires a little bit more of abstract Calabi-Yau category stuff. Now, I mentioned the non-abelian Hodge theory in dimension one. Of course, I can say more about that, but probably I should stop. So, questions?
I have a question about Calabi-Yau category with corners. In higher dimensions, of course, it's true that if you have a holomorphic symplectic form on this log compact, I mean, if you have a Poisson structure on the log compactification, then on the interior it will be Calabi-Yau. But I'm wondering, it's not just Calabi-Yau, it's also holomorphic symplectic. So what aspect of the category captures that information?
This notion of Calabi-Yau category with corners, it can be well applied to the category of DQ modules where everything is holomorphic. So it's not sort of, it's an abstract notion. The point is, let me, maybe it's easier to explain in this case when we have DQ modules. Like if you consider deformation quantization modules on the symplectic manifold, it's a Calabi-Yau category. But if it's non-compact and you want something X finite, then you need to compactify. So how to do that? You should start with the category of, say, in algebraic setting, perfect complexes inside. But for each collection of compactifying divisors, let's first consider all of them, not necessarily log divisors. Let's consider a full compactification. Then you can consider the cubic diagram of the categories of perfect complexes on each intersection. So for any finite subset of the set of all divisors, you have a category of perfect complexes on each of these intersections. And then you ask the first question, how to quantize, or better, deform first, this cubic diagram of categories. And it can be done by methods of deformation theory. Then you have some, first you have not only quantize the category of perfect complexes for your symplectic, open symplectic leaf, but you have also a collection of quantized categories of perfect complexes for each intersection. Moreover, if you look carefully at this deformation theory, you can quantize also the functors. You see, before quantization, you have various restriction functors, and they also can be quantized. So there's the whole huge thing, the collection of A infinity categories with restriction functors. It's a first step for the definition of the future Calabi-Yau category with corners. Then you should restrict yourself to those perfect complexes which has supports on Lagrangian subvarieties. And you should look what happened to that during this big quantization story. And in the end, you have an example of a Calabi-Yau category with corners. There is an abstract definition, it's written in. You see, what I'm telling you is just part of the story. We have two files, one over 200 pages, another over 120 pages. So, in some.
Are you referring to papers that are on the archive or that are not?
No. I'm not sure it will appear in the archive. No, it's not in the archive.
Okay. No. Okay, thank you.
More questions? All right. If there are no questions, so then this is the end of the talk. Thank you.
There is no clapping, I guess, with this type of thing.
But if you're mute.
Ah. All right. Thank you. Virtual. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Anyway, thank you. And if you are interested, I can mail slides.